British Sky Broadcasting presents Joe Kidd in association with Universal Pictures, starring Clint Eastwood as Joe Kidd and Robert Duvall as Frank Harlan. Also starring John Saxon as Louis Charmer, with Don Stroud, Stella Garcia and James Wainwright. The producer is Sidney Beckerman and the director is John Sturgis, voiced by Tony Cook on behalf of the MCS agency. Three American Mexicans ride into the small town of Sinola in New Mexico. One is wearing a traditional poncho. They innocuously tether their horses to a rail and walk casually to the corner of a stone brick building. Two of them sit while the third leans against a wall. As they wait, another two men arrive on horseback. They tie their horses to a different rail and blend unnoticed into the town, which has a mixture of neat timber and stone buildings, flanked by high mountains which stretch up to a cloudless sky. Watches from the sidewalk as another two riders appear. They dismount to tether their horses in front of a building with a sign which says Cattlemen's Association. They wait, leaning against a fence. One puffs on a cigar. They observe nonchalantly as yet another two ride in. There's no hint of recognition between any of them. They behave as if they could be strangers. A deputy sheriff crosses on foot the dusty main street. He's holding a box of food and heading to the jailhouse. Inside the jailhouse, another deputy unlocks the cell door. There are three prisoners behind bars. One, Joe Kidd, lies on a bed, his left wrist handcuffed to the bed frame. He looks disheveled, his collar hanging half off, his suit crumpled and his hat over his face.
That's a nice breakfast for you, boys. Hey, Joe. Wake up and eat something. You're gonna appear before the judge.
You're stinking drunk. What are you putting me here for? We don't want him.
Güero, son of a bitch. Woke us up? He don't give a damn.
Hey, Joe, you hear me? You're gonna appear before the judge.
Joe slowly removes his hat from his face, revealing a pair of bleary eyes.
Bob Mitchell, leave me?
Yep.
Who else?
And some others. Took three of them to get you in here last night.
One of the prisoners pours the coffee that's arrived into three mugs.
I'll be back for you.
As Joe reaches with his free hand to a table for his mug of coffee, the other prisoner moves the mug beyond his reach.
Smells good, huh? Wait on. You would like some? You say, please, Senor Naco. Say it.
While the third man in the jail gulps his coffee, looking on apprehensively, Joe glares at Naco. Outside, a flatbed wagon pulled by two horses rolls into town. At the reins, a Mexican wearing a poncho. Sitting beside him, a dusky woman with long dark hair, also dressed in a poncho, a long and colorful one. Both wear wide-brimmed hats. The town appears almost deserted. The wagon is brought to a standstill in a side street. It has been noticed by the men who rode into town earlier, and they discreetly make their way towards it. The man at the reins gets down and plucks a holster from the back of the wagon. He fastens it on his waist under his poncho. The woman remains on the wagon while the others assemble to collect weapons, rifles and pistols, from a box in the back. Her partner makes his way to the courthouse. The rest of the gang continue to arm themselves. In the courthouse, he waits in the reception area. Inside the courtroom, the judge is delivering a summary.
Remind you, the again. We're here to see if any of you people have a legal claim, and if you do, well, then a suit will be filed and taken to court. But I want you to think before you act. Now, I don't know whether or not the land grants you claim to have, signed by the King of Spain or the Emperor of Mexico, are going to stand up against the deeds and titles on file in this courthouse. Well, I do have some other court matters to attend to before adjourning, so I'm going to postpone these hearings until tomorrow. But you have time to give careful consideration to what you do.
Sheriff Bob Mitchell leaves the courtroom and doesn't pay any attention to the man in the poncho who stares after him. The sheriff heads for the jailhouse across the street.
People's teeth on edge.
Allen!
Yo!
Keep it Joe Kidd right now.
While one deputy unlocks the cell door, the other produces his gun and stands guard behind his colleague. Nacho is eating bread and stew as Joe is released from his handcuff.
Come on, Joe. They're waiting on you.
Joe gets warily to his feet, rubbing the wrist where the cuff has been. Nacho is seated and wipes food from his mouth with his hand.
Hey, wait on. Want some? Go ahead, take it. Huh?
Joe picks up the saucepan containing the stew, studies it, and then hurls the contents over Nacko's head. Dripping with the hot stew, Nacko rises in anger.
Here you go, Andy!
Joe slams the saucepan into his face, knocking him out and denting the pan. He turns to the other prisoner.
You want some?
The man shakes his head in fear. The deputies look on unperturbed before locking the cell. Joe is led outside where Sheriff Mitchell is waiting.
Governor, what in the hell's going on in there?
Nothing. Boy just spilled his breakfast.
You shouldn't have hit me, Bob.
Next time I'll knock your damn head off. Let's go see the judge.
The sheriff escorts Joe Kidd to the courthouse, where a party of American Mexicans involved in a land dispute are filing out. The man with the poncho is sitting nervously on a bench in the reception area. The sheriff ignores him, but Joe and he exchange glances as they pass. The courtroom is empty except for the judge and a court official. Sheriff Mitchell removes the hat Joe is wearing as he leads him before the judge.
I got three warrants on Joe Kidd here. Poaching, disorderly, and resisting arrest.
You said poaching?
Yes, sir. Witness saw him carrying a buck off the Hickory Reservation.
Arresting a man for shooting a deer?
Well, I warned him before, and he admits killing it.
What'd you do with this deer?
I hit him.
You know it's against the law to hunt on reservation land?
Well, a deer didn't know where he was, and I wasn't sure either.
Saying you plead guilty?
I'm saying I shot a mule deer over south of Monero.
And that's on the reservation. Last night, Johanna, I told him he had to pay a fine. He got nasty.
That's a disorderly charge?
No, sir. On a disorderly, I had to arrest him for something else.
What?
Well, he was standing out there, and he claimed he was going to urinate over the courthouse.
You do just about whatever you feel like, is that it?
Anything else?
Yes, sir, it. Whether or not you want to pay a $10 fine or spend 10 days in jail.
I'll take the 10 days.
Yana?
This court's adjourned till 2 o'clock.
You think you can sit in that jail while Calvin waits on you? No, sirree. You want to paint? You going to scrub floors? I'm going to work your ass.
The armed Mexican bandits, led by the man in the poncho, storm into the court.
I want to inform you people you're in a United States territorial court.
May we have listened to you enough?
Now it is our turn. You know, when the Anglo first wished to build a house in Sonora, he asked permission. Yes, yes, the old people, our grandfathers say it is all right. There is enough land. Let the Anglo have a home. Then you build more houses and more. You bring in the railroad and you make the courthouse. Yes, that is when we begin to hear you say strange things. 2 years ago, we start to see about our land claims. We go to the record office in Santa Fe and ask the man for the copies of our deeds and the titles. You know what he say? No, we don't have any records like that anymore. There was a fire in the courthouse and all the records, they got burnt up.
I told the people before, you feel you have a legal claim and can prove it with...
We have heard all that. Ricardo, we let you use our land, but you're pirates. You wish to steal it all.
The sheriff is handcuffed to wooden railings.
Look, mister, whatever your name is...
I am Luis Chama.
So you're Chama. Well, personally, I feel you're a lot more trouble than you're worth, but I'm still going to inform you. You are committing a criminal offense before a witness in a court of justice.
That is the word. Justice. Later, we will have much time to talk about it.
Luis Chama and the poncho man go into the court records office. The judge fixes a stern gaze on the dusky woman.
What are you staring at?
I just want to make sure I remember your face, honey, when you come to try.
I want to show you something. Anglos claim they own all the land, no? Big cattle and timber companies.
In front of the judge, Chama sets fire to land records he's collected.
One day there was a fire.
Que viva!
Por el hueso en la careta. Cuida que anda lleve. Vamos a la costa.
The sheriff stamps on the burning documents. Joe grips the judge's arm.
There you are! He's going with us. Talk to him a while about the law of the land rights.
What do you want him for? Why don't you take Mitchell? Mitchell's an expert on rights.
Ignoring the pointing gun, Joe takes the judge into his chambers and locks the door.
Think they'll shoot us? Maybe. Maybe not.
Other gang members rescue the two prisoners left in the jailhouse. The deputies are locked in their place. As the bandits emerge from the jail, they see Joe Kidd outside with the judge. They're heading towards the saloon. The dusky woman shouts a warning.
Louise, he's got the judge!
Who is with him?
Joe Kidd, he was in the jail.
I don't care about him. Get the judge.
Suggest you go right on out back, Your Honor.
Yes.
Hello, Joe. How'd you make out?
I'm not sure yet, Harry.
In the saloon, the judge exits through a rear door. Joe loads a shotgun and places it on the bar. He removes his hat and helps himself to a beer from the hand pump. Nacko bursts in, holding a gun. He sees Joe's hand on the shotgun.
Waiting till you're thirsty, eh? Where is he?
Oh, he went home.
Narco! Narco! Vámonos!
Your friends are calling you.
Vámonos pronto, Narco!
I guess I better go.
Yeah, I guess so.
Narco!
Maybe we'll see each other in jail again sometime, eh?
That's possible.
Adios.
Adios.
Nacko makes as if to leave, but then reels back into fire at Joe. Joe triggers the shotgun, the impact shooting Nacko into the street. As his comrades place the dead body onto a wagon, Joe casually sips his beer. He ambles to the door of the saloon and raises his glass to the gang leader, Luis Chama, as he and his bandits make good their escape. Three townsfolk fire after them with rifles. Sheriff Mitchell struggles to free himself from the court railings he's handcuffed to, eventually dragging the railings with him into the street outside, still attached to them. He remonstrates with one of his deputies, who rushes to unlock the cuffs. The whole performance is observed from the saloon entrance by a bemused Joe Kidd with his beer.
They brought those two fellas out of jail!
I said, where the hell have you been? Where?
In jail!
Gee, the former prophet! Get out of us! Get your guns! God damn!
Joe strails back to the bar. places his glass on the counter and hands the shotgun back to the startled barman.
Jeez.
Joe calmly takes a sandwich from a bar top display. Sheriff Bob Mitchell musters a posse.
I'll take the posse out. You stay here. Will you try to keep some law and order in this town while I'm gone?
Bob, how are we going to find him?
He just left some fresh tracks, didn't he?
Oh, they scattered tracks all over out there. How in the hell are we supposed to know which ones are Louis Chalmers? He gets up in the mountains, he'll be home. He could stay up there for good.
Now, just a damn minute. I'm not begging any of you to go with me. You want to sit home on your fat asses while that wild son of a bitch is roaming loose? That's up to you. If you don't mind him cutting your fences and running your stock, it's all right with me. But get the hell out of the way, because I'm riding, and I'm going to bring back him or his hire.
Hey, Joe, what are you doing standing over there?
Serving 10 days.
Bob, you know Joe's the one we need.
You want to go?
I haven't got anything against Louis Chalmers.
Joe eats his sandwich and drinks another beer on the saloon veranda as the posse is led away by the sheriff. They return later without any success. Joe watches as the sheriff pins a wanted poster up for Louis Chalmers.
Posse couldn't get him. You think that's gonna work?
Joe, you take your broom, that shovel, that rake, and that bucket. You get over to Courthouse Square and you pick up everything that's not nailed down to painted.
As Joe sets off with his cleaning implements, a train pulls into the town station, its funnel emitting plumes of smoke. A porter takes mail bags off the train. From the first of two passenger carriages, a smartly dressed man with a frilled shirt and a bootlace tie emerges with a well-dressed blonde woman, younger than he.
Howdy, Mr. Harlan.
Howdy. Go to the Grand Hotel.
You bet.
In the courthouse square, Joe pauses from his sweeping to observe the new arrivals. The woman brushes imaginary dust from her elegant dress as she stands on the platform. Men in suits emerge from other parts of the train with luggage, including leather gun cases. They look around suspiciously. Puffing on a cigar, Frank Harlan escorts his female companion to a waiting horse-drawn carriage. The other men follow in an open-top wagon to make the short journey to the Grand Hotel. Joe leans on his sweeping brush and stares. One of the sheriff's deputies leans casually on the porch of the courthouse with a rifle over his shoulder, watching Joe as he watches. At the Grand Hotel, two porters, one a young boy, diligently help with the luggage. They enter a tastefully furnished reception area, part wallpapered, part wooden panelled. Large paintings adorn the walls.
Good morning, Mr. Harlan. These telegraph messages come in last night and this morning. One of them I notice all the way from Chicago. Mr. Harlan, I want you to know what a pleasure it is to have you. Your friends. It's been how long? 2 or 3 months. Time goes so fast. It seems like yesterday. Oh, my, no. I'm glad you weren't here yesterday. I guess you heard about the excitement we had here. I've reserved the governor's suite for you and two other rooms. Will that be it? Mr. Harlan?
I want the whole second floor.
Oh, well, I've got guests, the other rooms. I mean, I don't have extra space anywhere. What am I supposed to do? I can't very well tell them to get up and get out, can I?
Give me $10 a head. I'll throw them out the window.
Why don't you just say the rooms are spoken for and there's nothing you can do about it?
If they give me any trouble, just give me a holler.
I don't see what's wrong with saying the rooms are spoken for.
Send it out for
them. Hello, Mr. Harlan. Ma'am? Is there anything I can do for you?
I want to see a man named Joe Kidd.
Joe Kidd's locked up in jail.
If he weren't, I doubt we'd be talking.
So you knew we had him locked up in jail, huh?
I'd like to pay the fine on him. I want you to send him over to me.
Didn't know he was a friend of yours.
Just send him on over. We'll be on the second floor.
Harlan escorts the woman from the lobby up the staircase, leaving his hard men to sort out the necessary. Sheriff Mitchell scrutinizes the men before leaving the hotel. He paces across the wide main street to Courthouse Square, where Joe is still sweeping.
Joe, Mr. Harlan wants to see you.
Who?
Mr. Harlan.
Don't know the man.
Do you know his name?
Never heard of him.
He knows you and he's paid you fine. He wants to see you right now.
Yeah, where is he?
Over the hotel.
And he's paid my fine, huh?
Mm-hmm.
That can't be all bad.
He thrusts the sweeping brush at the sheriff and strides off towards the Grand Hotel. On the second floor, he knocks on the door of a room. One of Harlan's men answers.
Joe Kidd?
Yeah.
Be with you in a minute.
The door is shut in his face. He's about to leave when the door of the next room is opened by Harlan's woman.
Hey, aren't you going to wait? Well, you sure don't look like you're supposed to.
Well, then how am I supposed to look?
We all dress like some town dude. Hey, were you really leaving? Not going to wait?
Well, he has to see me. But if he's busy, maybe some other time.
You don't know Mr. Harlan very well, do you?
He enters her room.
Is that what you call him? Mr. Harlan?
I call him Frank. A few other things. Why?
Well, you, don't look like his daughter. I don't think you're his wife.
A nice mother, either.
He lightly fingers a stocking lying on the bed.
But you do take care of him at times.
Ask him if you like.
Or find out for myself.
How long have they had you locked up?
2 days.
What would you be like after 2 months?
We wouldn't even be talking now.
He kisses her on the lips. The door opens.
Mr. Harlan can see you now.
He touches his hat as he leaves. The woman gives a half smile of excitement at his audacity. In the next room, Harlan is washing his face.
Mr. Harlan, Joe Kidd.
Kidd. Joe Kidd.
I'll say this, you come well recommended.
Judge Vince Brennan, 4th Territorial Court, spoke very highly of you. Man with the Indian Bureau named Waddles, I believe. Said you used to work up at the Hickorilla Apache Station. Know the mountains and game trails better than anybody. You supplying their meat for them?
Yeah, I worked for them a few years.
Boy, that understood you hunted men. Anybody with a price on his head. Good at it.
That was a long time ago.
Now, you got a one-loop outfit on Big Wash. You work when you're not out hunting.
I get out now and then, yeah.
Well, we propose to spend about a week, maybe 10 days, pay you whatever your rate is, and a bonus for everything we shoot worth mounting. Get us some mule deer, some elk, maybe one of the mountain cats, would you see one. Now, do you think this piece of iron will stop one of them big old cats?
Yeah, I suppose it would. It lets you get close enough.
We can get close enough, you hear that, Mingo? Mr. Kidd, I'd like you to meet my associates, Mr. Olin Mingo, Lamar Sims, Sir Roy Gannon. Now, these gentlemen are A1 first-class hunters, my friend, and I'd bet them against anybody at any distance.
You believe that? Well, if he says so, it's all right with me.
Well, whatever he says, that's it. Let me show you something here, buddy.
Lamar loads a long-barreled precision pistol and opens the window to show his prowess with the weapon.
Shut the window, Lamar.
Lamar looks back disappointed but complies.
Now we're going to need 4 head of horses, which we'll buy off you if you want. come to your place tomorrow night after dinner and start first thing in the morning.
You're asking me to guide for you, huh?
What do you think I've been talking about all this time?
Well, I don't hire out to guide, either hunting for animals or men.
You don't believe we're after mule deer at all, do you?
You're after Louis Chama.
Seen through it right away, didn't you? Got a keen eye.
That's simple enough. You deal in land, and he wants to take it away from you.
And if the sheriff here can't stop him, I will, mister. I got claim to 935 sections. That's nearly 600,000 acres. And I'm not going to permit some sheepherder by the name of Louis Chama to get away with cutting fences and stirring up the Mexican population with talk about land reform. Or am I going to waste time arguing in court? Now, here it is. I'll give you $500 to help us track that man. If it's your shot gets him, it's all right with me. $500, what do you say?
I already said it.
Wait a minute, sir. I paid a fine on you. It got you out of jail.
Well, if you want your $10 back, I'll serve out the rest of the time.
In the corridor, Joe opens the door of the next room. The blonde woman is bending to put on a stocking, her long hair falling over her face. She doesn't notice him at first. He studies her shapely body.
He's going on a hunting trip. I'll be back.
He touches his hat. She stares in bemusement and continues to stare after he closes the door. Joe rides out of town across the New Mexico countryside, where the brushwood is scorched by the sun on the lowland and the huge mountains are capped by the snow against a backdrop of a cloudless sky. He's riding towards his ranch. There's no sign of life at the timber ranch house, and the corral is empty. He brings his horse to a stop close to the spinning sails of a wind-operated water pump, which towers above the ground.
Emilio? Vita?
Joseph!
Vita, his Mexican housekeeper, comes out of hiding and runs towards him.
Se llevaron Emilio! Se llevaron los caballos. They take him. They take the horses too.
When did this happen? Where?
This morning, early. Emilio says stay home. And they take him. Ve allá arriba. Up there.
Joe follows her pointing finger towards the mountains. He sets off on his horse to look for his ranch hand, Emilio. He sees Amelia in a sitting position, tied with barbed wire to a wooden fence.
Joseph.
He looks around cautiously before getting off his horse. He produces from his saddlebag a pair of wire clippers and approaches Emilio, anger and concern on his face.
Joseph, where you been?
Chama, this.
With some of his men. They take some horses and shoot the rest. The one say you kill a friend of his. So he do this. Say he's gonna kill you too.
Joe looks at him with disquiet. It's nearly dusk when he arrives back in Sonola. A pair of oil lamps burn outside the Grand Hotel, where he tethers his horse to a rail. Inside the lobby, more oil lamps discreetly adorn the walls. Joe goes upstairs. Lamar stands provocatively at the top of the first flight. Joe grabs him by the belt and hurls him down the stairs.
Where the hell do you think you're going, huh?
Come on in.
You want Louis Chama?
Got thinking about the money, did you? Change your mind.
Do you want him?
I told you the deal, $500, and I don't care who pulls the trigger on it.
The price will be $1,000.
All right. Anything else?
Nope.
I'll meet you downstairs.
Lamar is waiting outside Harlan's door.
You want something?
You know how many holes I can put in you with this gun?
Laura? I got a dollar says I can break your neck before you get that rig moved a half inch.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Holland wants you around. It's the only reason I don't plug you right now.
Joe lights a cigar.
Well, Mr. Holland doesn't want me around anymore. You let me know, huh, boy?
Lamar eyes him with contempt. On a rugged mountain trail, Joe rides ahead of Frank Harland and his men. The five of them are in a single line, the last riders holding rifles. The trail cuts through the mountainous terrain, giant rock boulders on either side. Its barren desert land and the horses, each packed with overnight sleeping rolls, create flurries of dust in their wake.
I'd say my prayers, we might get lucky and find him sitting home waiting on us, Mingo.
Right.
Walk in there, how do you do, Mr. Chamber? For a dumbass sheep dipper, you sure been bothered. Causing all kinds of discomfort. There's supposed to be a road west of here we could save some time.
Game doesn't walk down roads. We're supposed to be hunting mule deer.
Yeah, if we find somebody walking down the road, which don't seem likely, does it?
Well, we've had company now for about a mile.
Where at?
Both sides of us.
I don't see a goddamn thing. How many of them?
Three, maybe more.
What the hell's going on?
Well, you keep your mouth shut. We got people going along with us. Maybe Shaman, maybe not.
I don't see anybody.
I see him, Frank.
You bet, right where he said.
Listen, I could wing one of those fellas if you wanted to talk to him.
Well, they're not much for staying hid, are they?
No. They're showing themselves, showing that they don't give a darn. They know they got us outnumbered.
Ahead of them, five Mexicans wait on their horses. Another three riders lurk in the distance. Joe recognizes the leading bandit in his poncho from the courtroom siege earlier.
Buenos dias, señor.
Buenos dias.
Joe looks suspiciously at the string of four horses they have in tow.
Nice looking string you have there.
Steel green, they'll be all right.
You rope them?
Yeah. We chase them 3 or 4 days.
You haven't by any chance seen any elk around, have you?
No, some deer. You out hunting, eh? You haven't been home for a while?
No, not for a few days.
Listen, you want some game? Go into San Juan's. Maybe you get a bear?
My friend, I want to ask you a question. I want to ask it only one time.
Yeah?
Where's Luis Chama?
Luis Chama? Yeah, I saw him sometime. Are you looking for him?
Harlan nods.
Well, we gotta go. If I see Luis Chama, I'll tell him you're asking for him. Vámonos. Adios.
The Mexicans ride off.
Mingo, I want him alive.
Mingo dismounts with his rifle. He puts the telescopic sights to his eye and targets the man with the poncho. He fires, and the man falls from his horse wounded. Lamar jumps from his saddle and, with the double-handed, long-barreled precision pistol, helps Mingo shoot the rest of the gang. None returns fire. Lamar and Mingo remount their horses and they ride towards Poncho, who is the only surviving member of the gang. He's been shot in the arm. The others lie dead. Joe releases the four horses that were in tow and joins Harlan's men. Poncho is kneeling on the ground, holding his injured arm. Lamar takes aim at him.
Well, I got him through the arm. He must have jumped some, though, because I was aiming for his shoulder.
Now then, you say you saw Luis Chama where?
I don't know anybody that name.
Well, we can cut your ears off if you want.
I don't know him.
Cut something else off, too.
Dile, hombre. Ahora que quiere que te pega.
He says tell you anything. Why get chopped up?
Chico, the only way you're going to stay alive is if you answer my question. You understand that? Now, the question I'm asking is, where's Louis Chama?
I don't know him.
Lamar.
Lamar shoots him dead. Joe looks shocked.
I came here to hunt Chama, not kill people in cold blood.
I told you once before I don't have time for court hearings. Now, if these people want to fight me, then I'll blow them straight to hell.
Lamar and Mingo glare at Joe, who continues to look uneasy as the five of them ride on. Their journey continues through a less barren landscape. There are trees and bushes around them. They stop at a stone lodge which has a pergola attached. An empty table and bench seats are under the pergola. At first, the building seems deserted.
Anybody home?
Harlan nods to Lamar, who dismounts, and with his pistol drawn, cautiously enters. Mingo, holding his rifle, brings his horse closer to the door.
Hello? Well, well, look what I have found.
Lamar brings out the dusky woman involved in the courtroom drama.
Evening. Honey, I want to ask you something. You know a man named Louis Chama?
I know him.
You see him lately?
No.
When was the last time?
About a week ago.
Are you a friend of his?
I see him when he goes by here.
Like on his way to Arroyo Blanco? Now, you know where that is.
It's over the pass, but I don't think he lives there anymore.
Well, honey, we're friends of his. If he's around here, we just want to stop in and say hello.
Is that why you have all those guns?
Well, this is a hunting trip, sweetheart. You gotta have guns.
Lamar reemerges from the lodge with an armful of weapons.
Why don't you ask her how come she's got so many guns, huh?
They belong to my father, my brother.
Oh. Where are they?
They went to see a man about work. I don't know when they come back.
Leave you out here all by yourself, do they?
I don't mind being alone for a few days.
Pretty girl like you should be left alone.
Maybe we ought to camp out here tonight if she was to invite us. What's your name, honey?
Helen Sanchez.
Helen? Well, what would you think if we stayed out here with you tonight?
I think you're going to do whatever you want.
While one of Harlan's gang sits on rock sipping coffee, rifle at the ready, Joe approaches Helen, who's brewing the coffee under the pergola. He has recognized her as one of the Mexican bandits. He puts down a jug for her to fill.
They'd like some more coffee.
She pours coffee into the jug and raises her eyes to meet his gaze.
Have you told them yet?
Nope.
Why not?
I didn't figure it was any of their business, really.
But you are with them.
Well, let's just say that I made a poor judgment, but I'm going to have to live with it for a while. When I was in jail there in town, there was a man named Naco.
He died 2 days ago.
He shouldn't have come at me. I didn't want him to.
But you want Chama, so you join them.
Everybody wants Chama. Either they can get shot or hanged. I think he realized that now.
There's some people who will give their lives for what they believe. You understand that?
I guess so, if they want something bad enough.
No, no, no. Even if there's no chance but to do it for others, like a soldier gives his life. You don't know Luis Chama. Maybe you never met anybody like him.
Maybe not. Were you with him when he came by my place?
Yes, I was there. You went to kill me, too.
There was a man named Emilio. Was with my horses?
I remember him. Ramon went back to see if he was following us.
Ramon, huh?
Frank Harlan rides on with his men. They've taken Helen with them.
Next stop, Bandera Station.
Isn't anything there with stock bins?
I bet.
At the prearranged meeting point, more than a dozen armed men are waiting. They have a common aim, to hunt down the revolutionary leader, Luis Chama.
Garland, where you been? It's a good time. A chance to rush from your train ride.
Expect you'd be here waiting.
We're here now, LJ.
Say yes, sir, let's go. We're ready.
All those guns to kill one man.
Yeah, if they find him.
They ride slowly in single file, high into the hills, flanked by the steep mountains. Third in the line of riders is Helen, followed by Joe Kidd. The tracks are rough, and the horses carefully pick their way through the scorched brushwood. Ahead of them, as a mountain village, a scattering of stone and timber buildings. The most prominent building is a church, a large stone cross on its pinnacle. The highest point is the church bell tower, but this is dwarfed by the huge mountain range behind. Some of the riders break out of line to encircle the village, which appears to be deserted apart from chickens which roam freely, pecking in the dust. The birds scatter as the men ride in.
Everybody out in the street.
Lamar guides his horse to the village center to carry out Harlan's instructions.
All right, everybody out! Everybody out in the street!
The gang disperses to take cover as they're shot at. They're not sure where the shooting is coming from. Joe and Helen look around and seem less perturbed. The priest appears at the door of the church.
Hold your fire! You're way up in those rocks!
All eyes and weapons are trained on the rocks above the village, but there's no sign of anybody. Frank Harlan breaks the silence.
Chamber! You hit one of my men! I'll kill 10 of your people!
Joe and Helen stand together under a pergola. He leans against a wall. She grips a post, staring into the hills. Harlan gets to his feet from behind a stone wall. Holding his rifle, he looks around uneasily. His men still have their weapons trained on the hills. He walks towards the padre, kicking a stone in anger as he does so. The padre stands motionless with two other men from the village behind him.
Morning, padre. I want you to call all you people out here. We're going to hold services here in the street.
Vengan aquí todos.
Bring them out. Bring them out in the street.
Vengan tranquilos. Vengan todos. No tengan miedo. Vengan sin miedo. Vengan tranquilos.
Groups of villagers appear out of hiding.
Roy?
The villagers, mostly women and children, assemble in front of the church. Weapons are stacked on a table nearby. Joe Kidd looks at the collection of pistols and rifles with interest. He picks up a handgun to examine it.
Now then, I don't want to take up much of your time. I just want to say
that we're going to shoot five of you if Luis Chama don't come down off his mountain by sunup tomorrow morning. If you don't show by noon, we shoot five more. Still doesn't show up by supper time. We put five more against that wall. Now the next day we have to, we'll start all over again.
Joe looks on with disdain. Harlan summons a young boy.
Son. ¿Habla usted inglés?
Sí.
And do you have a horse?
I have a horse.
I want you to get on your horse and go upstairs there and ask Luis Chama if he heard what I said in case he didn't understand me.
Sí,
comprende?
Sí, señor.
Padre, get them all inside the church.
Vamos a la iglesia.
El resto esperan en la iglesia hasta el viernes. Todos están muertos, comprende?
Now repeat the whole sermon in case any of them American citizens don't understand English.
Oigan, arriba! Si Luis Chama no va de la montaña para la mañana, vamos a matar cinco de ustedes.
The boy rides off on his mission.
Si no viene para mediodía, mataremos cinco más. Y en la tarde lo mismo. Mañana lo mismo. ¿Comprende?
Stay catching men, LJ. Put the horses down the other end of town. Leave the saddles on. Me and the little girl are bunking here. Kid, you're fired. Take his gun, Mingo. Put him in the church.
One of the gang, Roy, pulls a gun on Joe, and Mingo steps from behind to pluck Joe's gun from his holster. Lamar watches with glee.
Look at him. Without his gun, he looks like a big, dumb farm boy. Go ahead, farm boy. Take your pick.
Joe glances at the stack of weapons on the table and moves closer to them. Other gang members look on tensely. Gripping his holster, which goes around his chest, Lamar paces towards Joe.
I know it's a crappy deal, buddy, but that's all you got. It's a matter you run out of nerve. Go ahead. Grab. Because I'm going to blow your head off. I said make a grab.
Joe grabs a rifle and slams it into Lamar's face. With Lamar on the ground, Joe marches off towards the church. But Lamar picks himself up and runs after him. This time, Joe delivers a right hook to the man's chin, knocking him to the ground again.
Jesus. That boy don't ever learn.
Well, the fun's over and he's gone to church.
Tenemos que rezar mucho.
The priest halts the address he's making to the villagers as Joe enters the church. He wanders through the building towards another door. The padre stands in front of his congregation at the altar, his hands clasped together in front of him. The altar is clothed, and there's an unlit candelabra in the center, next to a religious statue. Each side is a holy picture, one of the Virgin Mary and the other of Christ. The door Joe opens leads to the lower part of the bell tower, where there are more religious pictures. A rope comes down through the timber platform above. There's a rustic table and chairs and a bunk bed in the small room. There are another two doors. Joe tries one of them and finds it's locked. Through the other door, the padre appears. A boy carrying a mug and jug is with him. Joe sits down.
Are you thirsty?
Yeah, what do you have there?
Holy water.
Just about everything else. I might as well have some holy water.
Today is the feast of St. James the Apostle, one of the first martyrs. I will tell the people pray to him for his strength and courage. St. James was beheaded rather than deny his faith.
You wouldn't have a gun around here, would you, Padre?
The padre looks anguished. Joe sips the holy water.
Good time of day, LJ. Day's work's done, man's waiting on a good supper.
From across the street, Harlan hears the knocking from the inside of the locked church door. He crosses to the church, where the door is guarded by two armed men.
Open the door, Mick.
Joe Kidd is at the other side of the door.
What about these people? You gonna feed them?
Lead them. Roy, let him get some food for these people in here.
Joe walks to an outside kitchen where food is being prepared on a stone stove by women of the village.
Señora! Señora! Dele comida para la gente.
Close to the stove, Lamar sits drinking whiskey from a bottle.
Hey, Lamar. How are you feeling? That medicine easing the pain, ain't
he? You just keep talking. You're spitting teeth all night.
Joe half smiles at the disgruntled-looking Lamar before collecting bread and empty saucepans. He carries the loaves and the saucepans to the village taverna, which Harlan has commandeered. One of the gang, Roy, follows him. Harlan sits at a table outside with LJ. A bottle of liquor is on the table. Harlan takes the cigar from his lips as Joe and Roy approach.
The high-priced waiter you got there, Roy.
Inside, Helen is making soup.
You can eat all that?
It's got it glutton outside.
How's he treating you?
We're going to get married. What the hell do you think?
By any chance, have a loaded gun around here I could use, would he?
He glances at Roy in the doorway, who's been joined by Harlan.
Don't do anything foolish. Wait for Luis.
Well, I've been wondering about that. The boy they sent out, he seems to be having trouble finding his way back.
He's probably still hunting for Sharma.
Think so?
Luis is up there. He knows, and he'll come. With a gun or without one, but he'll come.
He looks again towards the doorway.
I certainly do hope so. If he doesn't, it's gonna disappoint an awful lot of people.
Helen has ladled soup into two saucepans. Joe takes them along with the bread. In the doorway, Roy touches his hat to Helen and follows Joe to the church. It's dusk. One of the gang sits on the rocks on guard duty, his rifle pointing towards the night sky. At dawn, some of the men are huddling close to a campfire for warmth. Lamar, a blanket around his shoulders, is sitting unblinking, his long-barreled pistol on his lap.
You don't blink soon, your eyeballs will fall out.
There's a shout from the guard in the bell tower.
Hey! How about somebody else coming up here for a while?
You want to take that, Lamar?
Lamar stares back at Harlan and fingers his gun.
Why not?
Lamar creeps into the room below the bell tower holding his gun. Joe is sleeping on a bunk bed covered by a blanket. His hat is low, almost covering his closed eyes. As Lamar sneaks towards him, Joe's eyes flicker open. Lamar cocks his pistol and points it to Joe's head. Joe moves his hat so he can see. As Lamar is about to fire, the trapdoor above opens, startling him.
Come on, Lamar, let's get up here.
When this is over, we finish it.
Lamar goes up the ladder and through the trapdoor to the belfry, relieving the guard who's just come down. Joe stares after him. As the trapdoor shuts, Joe's eyes open wide as he sees another handgun pointing at him.
From the table where they put the guns. I don't even know if it fires.
Don't worry, it fires.
I have lived here with my people 33 years. And this morning, I can't look in their faces. I can't bless five of them and send them outside.
Well, Padre, we'll see.
Joe loads the gun with bullets from his gun belt and sticks the weapon in his empty holster. He pats the padre on the shoulder and ascends the ladder. He takes out the gun and perches under the trapdoor on timber wall supports. He carefully raises the door enough to be able to peep at Lamar pacing above him. He replaces the gun in his holster and finds a more secure foothold. He gently raises the trapdoor again as Lamar walks up and down. He counts the man's steps and calculates. Suddenly, Joe springs the trapdoor wide open. Lamar steps into the void and falls to the stone floor below.
He's dead.
I believe you. Send up his gun and hat, will you?
Joe waits, crouched down in the bell tower, as the priest secures the dead man's hat and gun to the bell rope for Joe to haul up. The belfry is surrounded by a waist-high stone wall and has a timber roof. By crouching, Joe can't be seen from the ground. As the padre stares up at him through the roof hatch, Joe replaces his own hat with the hat Lamar was wearing. He hitches up his jacket collar and, with the distinctive long-barreled pistol, assumes the role of the man who fell to his death. From the ground, he looks like Lamar. Roy looks up and taunts him.
Hey, Lamar, now don't you fall asleep up there.
Why don't you go screw yourself?
Roy is bemused and smiles broadly. From the tower, Joe takes in a commanding view of New Mexico, the rugged rocks interspersed with bushes and shrubbery, and the huge, snow-capped mountain range in the distance. But he concentrates on the immediate view. Looking down on the side furthest from Roy and Mingo on the ground, he sees a member of the gang, rifle in hand, directly below him.
Oh, that sweet boy's fallen asleep, or either he's fallen off the tower.
I'll let him alone. He's had a bad night.
Out of sight of Roy and Mingo, Joe ties a heavy clay pot of water to a rope. He carefully lowers the rope down the side of the bell tower until the vessel is just above the head of the man with the rifle. Moving his arm from side to side, he starts the pot to swing. With each movement of his arm, the swinging motion gets wider and wider, like a giant pendulum on a clock about to strike. On the ground below him, the gang member stares ahead blankly, unaware that a swinging pot is about to strike him. It gains more and more momentum. Joe lowers the rope a few more inches. It shatters on impact with the man's head. Joe allows himself a self-satisfied smile as the man lies flat out below him. He takes off Lamar's hat and puts on his own. Gripping the long-barreled pistol, he slides down the rope. The pistol falls from his grasp, and he retrieves it when he reaches the ground. Joe looks around cautiously to make sure he hasn't been spotted. He creeps to a corner of the church and peeps round. He sees Frank Harlan leave the taverna with a sense of mission.
Okay, let's get five of them out here. Come on. I want Chambers to see the facts of life staring him in the face.
One of the gang rushes into the church to bring out hostages.
Roy, Mingo!
Roy throws the contents of his coffee mug into the dust to join Harlan. Mingo gets from his chair and unwraps a blanket from his shoulders, revealing the rifle with telescopic sights. He follows Roy. Five villagers, all men, are brought from inside the church and are made to stand in the street to await their fate. Harlan shouts instructions to other members of the gang.
Hey, you fellas, get out of the field, get against the rocks, we can do some good! Come on!
Several men set off to take cover behind rocks. Joe is still watching. Unobserved, he creeps away to another vantage point. Harlan points to the bewildered and frightened villagers and shouts into the hills.
There they are, Chamber! Are you gonna come down there?
Joe scrambles over rocks to work his way unseen to the other side of the village. Harlan marches off to the taverna and paces through, ignoring Helen, who's sitting at a table. He goes through another door at the back. He stands on a raised area formed by natural rock with good views of the hills. He doesn't know that Joe is lurking close to the rocks beneath him and pointing a gun at him. Harlan adjusts his jacket and addresses the hills.
Taylor! You got 1 minute!
Helen gets up from the table, leaving a plate of food untouched.
Now, that's not much of a shot for you, is it, Mingo?
Where you hit him?
So I'll pick a spot.
First man, second button. There's 6 bits, but you gotta hit the button.
For 6 bits, I'll hit the second button on both men.
Harlan is angry that there's no reaction from Chama and strides off to rejoin Roy and Mingo with the hostages. Joe climbs the rock and enters the taverna through the rear door. Helen tries to knife him, thinking he's Harlan.
Jesus.
Joe disarms her. As he goes to the front part of the bar, she takes her hat from a hook and seizes a gun conveniently left in a holster on a table. She places it under her poncho. Joe peeps outside through a curtain.
Mingo! Shoot two of them right now.
Mingo stubs out his cigarette and prepares to shoot two of the hostages. Joe ushers Helen out of the rear door of the taverna. He's picked up a rifle case. Mingo is pointing his rifle at the hostages. They bless themselves with the sign of the cross. He's about to shoot when Joe opens fire, shooting rapidly at the gang, sending them scattering for cover. Joe and Helen scamper through a hail of bullets. A man grabs Helen, but she escapes when he's brought down with a shot. Joe takes cover behind rocks and continues to bombard the captors with repeated fire. A hanging water pot shatters. Joe breaks cover and runs towards the corral. Helen is already on her horse, and Joe mounts his, still gripping the rifle case. As they gallop off, Joe throws a lasso around a fence post, opening up the fence for the horses to escape. Harlan and his surviving men fire after Joe and Helen, in confusion, as they witness their own horses galloping away too, frightened by the gunfire. As Joe and Helen disappear into the hills, Harlan puts his gun back in its holster, taking his hat off, revealing a balding head. He stares after them in anger and frustration. Other men run to try to catch their escaping horses. Luis Chama and his Mexican revolutionaries watch as Joe and Helen approach their hideout high in the hills. One of the bandits is about to take Joe's gun.
How you doing?
Don't touch it.
Chama, with a droopy moustache and wearing a sheepskin jacket, waits as Helen gets from her horse and strides towards him.
You would have let them kill those people.
I'm going to tell you something, and you must listen and try and understand. If our people are killed for what we are doing, they will become names. They will live forever.
Martyrs. I think we have enough of them already.
Then why do you want me to become one? Listen. We only win if I stay alive. If those men kill me now, who will take my place?
Joe leans against a rock, listening.
You understand?
You let people die for you.
For themselves. For what they believe.
They believe in you.
I am telling you how it is.
There is no other way.
I know another way. Come with me back to Sonola, give yourself up, take your chances in court.
Stay out of it.
You brought me into it when you stole my horses and barbed my man.
And you killed one of ours. So you help her, now we are even. Go home while you can.
Louise, he is right. We must give ourselves up, don't you see? There is no other way.
I do not care what you think. I take you along for cold nights and days when there is nothing to do. Not to hear you talk.
Helen stares at Chama, her bottom lip quivering. Chama walks to the edge of the cliff overlooking the village. The rest follow.
Harlan! You are Chama?
You can find him in the Sonola jail.
Atlanta.
Just like that, huh?
In the village below, Harlan's men mount their horses. On the cliff above, Joe pulls his gun on Chama.
Straight up or draped over the saddle, either one.
And what about my men?
I don't much care about them. They can come along or stay, whatever pleases them.
Listen to this Anglo son of a bitch. Luis, say it.
We throw him off the cliff.
Ramón, Ramón, no te metes en esto. Bien, que este no es su lugar.
All right. This isn't the time. We will settle this later.
Vámonos con él. Pero quién sabe hasta dónde.
Joe's gun is still in his hand, but Charmer and his men ignore the threat and they disperse. Raymond glowers at Joe before leaving. Storm clouds gather in the skies. 11 men on horses gallop through the scrubland, creating clouds of dust behind them. Bring their horses to a halt where two railway lines converge. Frank Harlan is the first to dismount. He hands the reins of his horse to LJ.
Train stop here, Mr. Harlan?
It'll stop, LJ.
Some distance away, Charmer and his men are riding over the plain. Joe and Helen ride with them. A shot rings out. One of Charmer's men is hit and he falls from his horse. The others try to take cover and return fire, but they're not sure where or who they're supposed to be shooting at.
Hold your fire, they're way out of range.
No disparen, está muy lejos.
Joe can just make out a figure high up on a distant rock. He sees the smoke from the powerful long-range rifle that's being fired at them. They lie in the scrubland without rocks to protect them, and the bullets are getting too close for comfort. Joe has an idea. He remembers the rifle case he found in the taverna. He opens it and begins assembling the long-range rifle contained in the case. A bullet from the distant rifleman hits the dust, only inches from Charmer. Helen, with her hat and a long poncho, huddles in the dust, her head low. Joe is now fixing the telescopic sight to the rifle. As he adjusts the sight to get an accurate fix, there's another puff of smoke from the rock. Another Mexican takes the bullet. High in the rocks, Mingo smiles with self-satisfaction at his direct hit. He loads again, and Joe also loads his rifle. Joe puts the telescopic sight to his eye. The storm clouds have cleared in the sky, and the sun glints on his rifle barrel as Joe takes careful aim. Mingo touches his chest, where the high-velocity bullet has entered. He stares in disbelief at the blood on his hand. He mouths words, but no sound comes out. His body crumples, and he rolls and bounces down the rocks, the disbelieving victim of a rifle as powerful as his own. Charmer glances at Joe with relief and admiration. It's nearly dusk in Sonola. Belching out smoke and steam, a freight train pulls into the station, its headlight glowing. As well as transporting heavy machinery on an open wagon, the locomotive also carries Frank Harlan and 10 of his men. They disembark and make their way with luggage and saddles to the hotel, watched suspiciously by a Mexican standing in the doorway of a shop advertising groceries, boots, shoes and crockery. At the hotel, Harlan goes straight upstairs while the others deposit their baggage in the lobby. Roy signs the register, watched by a nervous hotel manager.
There'll be 11.
Harlan enters the room of his young woman friend.
Hi.
Hey, little girl.
Oh, holy. That person got a chance to breathe.
I'll get you breathing again so you're never going to stop. You missed me.
Of course I did.
Did you?
Yes.
Stay right here in the room like I told you. Like hell.
I did too.
The sheriff knocks.
Miss Harlan, ma'am, how was your hunting trip?
Mitchell, how you been?
Just fine.
Listen, someone's gonna bring Lewis Chamey in probably tomorrow, and I want you to hand him over to me, you understand?
What'd you say?
I want you to hand him over to me.
Mr. Harlan ain't no.
Why don't you take a few days off, go get drunk somewhere?
Mr. Harlan,
Mitchell, tomorrow is Sunday. Now, why don't you go to church and pray that I don't see you again till this is done? Little girl, find some whiskey, pour me a drink.
Early next morning, snipers with rifles take up positions on the roofs of three buildings. Roy L.J. and another member of the gang are at the deserted railway station, their eyes darting in all directions for a sign of Charmer or his followers. Roy wanders along to the railroad saloon, where the barman is looking into the street through the glass of his closed door.
Morning. Let's open up.
We're closed.
You're open.
We're open.
The barman opens the saloon doors, but Roy doesn't enter. He rejoins LJ at the station. Their colleagues wait discreetly close by, rifles at the ready. Sheriff Mitchell looks from his office window into the seemingly empty streets. Frank Harlan has changed into a smart suit with a bootlace tie around his neck. He sips coffee alone at a highly polished table in the hotel lobby. A silver jug is on the table. Charmer, Joe and Helen ride slowly towards the town. They're accompanied by seven of Charmer's men. On the outskirts, they halt their horses.
All right, I say Charmer goes to jail, pleads his case. What do you say?
They all scrutinize Joe Kidd. Charmer is deep in thought, and eventually he nods his head.
Adios, compadres. Que les vayan bien.
His loyal followers reluctantly start to ride away.
Not you, Ramon.
Ramon looks puzzled but stays where he is. The other six men ride out of town. The remaining four, Joe, Charmer, Helen and Ramon, steer their horses towards the town centre. They ride slowly and cautiously past the stone ruins of where the old town used to be. From the roof of a tall building which bears the inscription 1896, two snipers have a clear view of the streets below. The American flag, the stars and stripes, flutters from a flagpole above their heads. One of the men on the roof gives a signal, which is picked up by the others. Harlan puts his coffee cup down and goes to the window of the hotel. Led by Joe, the four watchfully continue the journey towards the town centre. Joe is suspicious because things appear so quiet. Nobody is about.
Ramon. Lead off, huh?
Where two muddy streets converge, Ramon follows Joe's instructions and rides on ahead. It's the last instruction he'll ever follow as he falls into the mud, shot by a sniper.
Figured we might be too close.
Joe leads Charmer and Helen away from the center.
Come on in, kid. Nobody's gonna hurt you. Hey, kid. Bring Tom over here. Come on in, kid.
Roy and LJ gaze up at the sniper who gave the signal. He indicates that he's lost sight of the prey. Joe, Charmer and Helen skirt around the town, close to where the railway track comes in. Roy and LJ go to the saloon to await developments. LJ first spitting out the tobacco he's been chewing. Another member of the gang follows them. As the barman puts on his serving apron, Roy goes behind the bar and helps himself to a bottle of whiskey. LJ rests his rifle on a table. On his horse, Joe leads Charmer and Helen on their horses off the beaten track, through bushes and undergrowth. past a giant cactus plant, until they come to a clearing where the gleaming locomotive is resting next to a water tower. The train, still carrying heavy machinery, has been left in sidings. Smoke flows from the funnel. The three of them tether their horses close by, and Joe climbs into the driver's cab. Charmer, with his rifle in his hand, follows, and so does Helen. Once on board, Joe quickly familiarizes himself with the controls. Clouds of steam bellow out as Joe guides the locomotive towards the station in the center of town. Two armed men wait on the station platform. They're not waiting for a train and are not suspicious when they hear one approaching. Helen sits in the fireman's seat in the cab next to Joe. Charmer is behind them holding his rifle. Sheriff Mitchell looks out of his window when he hears the steam locomotive. Harlan twitches back net curtains at the hotel to have a look. When the train approaches the buffers at the end of the line, instead of applying the brakes, Joe gives it more steam. The multi-tonned engine crashes through the buffers, leaving the tracks. It continues into a timber building which has a painted sign saying drugs, soda fountain, cigars. The wooden structure splinters like a doll's house being bashed by a hammer. In the saloon bar where three of Harlan's men are drinking, there's puzzlement and consternation as they feel the floor vibrating. Pictures on the wall are moving, glasses and bottles shake. Roy trembles. He tries to take cover under the bar. The train plows into the saloon, dislodging the bar and shunting it back by several feet, knocking an astonished LJ to the floor. As the engine comes to rest in the saloon, its fender pointing in the street the other side, Joe and Charmer spring another surprise on the shock gang members. They shoot them. The three climb down from the cab, and Joe crosses to the saloon door to see Sheriff Mitchell emerge from his office, wide-eyed, mouth open in amazement.
Mitchell! Got a prisoner for you.
A rifle shot shatters a mirror close to Joe's head.
Jesus, Joe!
Here, give me some cover.
Start with the hotel.
Joe throws the barman a rifle and scrambles over the locomotive to exit via the demolished wall. Charmer takes the rifle, smashes a window, and fires at the hotel. Another bullet brings down a roof sniper. The sheriff, gun in hand, stays in his office, peering out of the windows in panic. Behind the shattered hotel window, Harlan is hit in the hand. Charmer shoots down another sniper. Harlan picks himself up from the floor and, with his rifle in his good hand, makes a dash from the hotel. He takes temporary cover behind a wall in the empty street, looking around anxiously. Joe runs to another part of town. Out of the firing line, Harlan crosses the street to the courthouse. He goes up steps to a rear door, his injured hand, which is bleeding, lightly touching the handrail. He finds the door unlocked and goes inside, pointing his gun ahead of him. He cautiously creeps into the main courtroom, passing the furled American flag. The judge's leather swivel chair is empty on a raised platform to his left. While the gun battle continues outside, Harlan slowly paces towards the main entrance to the courthouse, past the empty public bench seats. still pointing his rifle ahead of him, he opens the door to the main reception area and makes his way to the window overlooking the street. He's just in time to see two of his roof snipers surrender with their hands in the air, having thrown down their weapons into the street below. He glances round at the sound of a door opening. There's nobody else in the reception area. He tries to follow the sound of footsteps with his adrenaline in overdrive. He goes back into the main courtroom, rifle ready to fire. The courtroom still looks empty. Through the window, he glimpses a figure walking past with a gun. He fires through the glass. As the man falls to the ground, the judge's high-backed chair swivels around. Facing Harlan, pointing a gun, is Joe Kidd. Harlan knows he hasn't time to raise his rifle. They stare intensely at each other, Joe's eyes narrow. The bullet goes through Harlan, and as he slumps to the floor of the justice building, blood appears at the back of his jacket where the bullet made its exit. As Joe continues to point his gun at the dead man, Sheriff Mitchell appears, pistol in hand, at the open door of the courtroom.
Bob, get out of here.
The sheriff looks from Joe to the body of Harlan before leaving, shock and confusion on his face. Joe follows Sheriff Mitchell outside. Mitchell sees the two rooftop snipers still with their hands up, having had enough. He puts his gun in his holster, as does Joe, who's joined him. Across the street, they see Charmer, rifle in hand, standing outside the saloon with Helen. The sheriff and Joe stride towards them. Joe and Charmer look each other in the eye with mutual respect.
Good luck, huh?
Charmer unties his gun holster and it falls to the ground. Helen smiles at him. He walks towards the town jail.
Well, it settles that. Anything I can do for you, Joe?
Joe's face hardens. He knocks the bewildered sheriff to the ground.
Come on.
Joe and Helen mount their horses. The sheriff is still lying in the dust.
Joe, you shouldn't have done that.
Next time, I'll knock your damn head off.
Joe and Helen ride out past baffled railwaymen, trying to figure out how to extricate their steaming locomotive from the rubble of the saloon bar. The end.